listening to The 30 Podcast. Here's your host, Jazz Kang.
Lots to discuss in Sixerland. Before we jump into things, don't forget, subscribe to the Liberty Ballers Podcast Network. You can catch us on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, you name it, we are there. Of course, we always appreciate a five-star review if you want to give us one. And you can also check out libertyballers.com as we're now less than 2 weeks away from the kickoff of the regular season. Joining me, one of the people behind the magic at libertyballers.com, Paul Hudrick. Paul, what is going on, my man?
I'm just over here living the dream, Jazz. You know me. Fun game last night, though. It was fun to be back in the building, and it was like the closest we've encountered to normal since everything. We were, you know, they had us kind of in the club box seats last year for most of the season, and in the playoffs, we were allowed to sit courtside last night, which is crazy. Like, we literally haven't been allowed since, you know, February 11th or whatever. That was the last time we were able to do that. So it was as close of a return to normalcy as we've experienced. And yeah, it felt good. It felt good to just be back in the building, feel that energy. And you know, it was just a very exciting feeling that got me more excited for the season, quite frankly.
Well, yeah. What was it like being back in the building and kind of getting to be up close and personal in terms of seeing the players and how things were on the court? Like, if you're picking this up, like, did the Sixers have a lot of energy? How do you think their chemistry looks? What was that like for you, you know, being in the building and getting to see that, like I said, up close and personal?
Yeah, it is amazing. Like, the little things that you pick up on when you're there that you maybe don't pick up on when you're either, you know, sitting far away or watching on TV. And like, one of the things, it's like a little thing, but it really stood out to me. There was a play where Isaiah Joe hit like a transition three, a pull-up transition three. And it just looked so smooth in person. And I was like, man, like, this guy's shot I've always, you know, you can see it on TV. Clearly the guy can shoot the hell out of the ball, but when you see it in person and it's like this pull up and it's also smooth and also connected, and this, the way, like, you just miss those little things. And like, watching guys warm up, which is so dumb in like the retrospect of things, but like seeing like all these guys, like their routines, like back in the day, like watching JJ Redick warm up was like an event, because it was just so interesting to watch his routine and what he does. And like, it's similar with Seth Curry now. Like, he just takes so many shots from so many different angles and in so many different circumstances to prepare himself for the games. And watching Embiid warm up, you know, guys that we, like a guy like Drummond, who we haven't seen, like his routine and what he does. It's just those little tiny things that you kind of don't, I guess you would say we take them all for granted. And then when you get to experience them again, it kind of all floods back to you, and you feel like, I don't know, like it feels just like a more complete experience covering a game.
Yeah, I mean, we noticed that too, just being back in the building. Like, I was there with you for media day and camp. And, you know, like you mentioned, being back actually at Wells Fargo, like, when you were first walking back in, because I mean, you used to work for NBC, for people who don't know that, but when you're walking back into the building, what was your first thought like when you're going back and you're like, holy smokes, I haven't done this in a long time? Or like, were you kind of excited to be walking back in?
It was a mix of both, for sure. Like, so I'll say this too, like, legit. So media day, and then one day when we were at the practice facility during training camp, it was like borderline disorienting because we haven't experienced this. We haven't been able to. So it was almost like a dream. Like, it didn't feel real because it's just been so long since we experienced all these things, and we have experienced them in the past. So, you know what I mean? It's just like this weird, almost out of body kind of thing. And it definitely, everything felt that way yesterday. You know, you walk into the building and it feels different. And then the two biggest things were the press area. Cause like last year, even though we were allowed in the building, it was 100% Zooms. This year it's in person. So we actually got to go into the press box room or the press conference room, mm-hmm. talk to Doc Rivers. And even he commented on it. He's like, wow. He's like, this is nice. Like, this is so different, you know, than talking to a computer monitor and have answer questions like that. And there is a human element. And listen, I think the NBA has been, you know, very smart with the regulations and the safety protocols. I agree with all of it. But at the same time, it's so much more of a human experience when you're face to face with someone, even if you are whatever, wearing a mask and 6 feet apart. It's still a way more humanizing experience. It feels like you can ask questions in a better way. It feels like you get better answers. you do feel like an energy between two human beings, which you don't get over a computer screen. So yeah, just that was crazy. And then again, just being able to stand like courtside and watch these guys, watch, you know, the best athletes in the world kind of work to get ready for games, and then to watch the game itself, it's already such a like we're truly lucky to have that experience anyway. And again, I can't help but feel like we all kind of just took it for granted not having it, and now that it's back, it's such a warm and good feeling.
Paul, being in the building and, you know, covering practices pretty much whenever they are holding one in Camden, what have you picked up on over the last week or so? Like, if you're looking at this, and, you know, Isaiah Joe is a guy I talked about on the recap pod I did after the Sixers 12-point win over the Raptors in their second preseason game. But Isaiah Joe, you know, 15 points, shot 3 or 4 from beyond the arc, you know, looking really good on the defensive end in terms of being active, you know, getting in the passing lane and showing a lot of energy. What have you picked up on when you've been at practice? And again, for those who don't know, the teams don't let you watch, you know, 2 hours of practice. You basically get in for 10, 15 minutes, and you'll get some time with Doc, obviously, usually for sure, and then some of the players. But when you're in there, and again, given the limited amount of time you're allowed to be watching the end of practice and being in the building, is there anything that's standing out to you in terms of the players that, hey, you know what, this guy's should be making a case to get some time in the rotation this season?
I will say that I think, because you're right, we get to watch like nothing in practice, basically, right? Like, we don't get to actually watch anything of
substance. It's basically for B-roll, right?
Yeah,
for
the right. It, like, yeah. Like 100%. That's really all it is. And so we had to go off of basically what Doc Rivers and the players tell us. I will say that a lot of what Doc Rivers has been talking about during practice, you saw a lot of it come to fruition against the Raptors in the second game. Whether that is Isaiah Joe, who Doc said, we need to find a way to get this guy, you know, in the mix more, which a lot of people, when I tweeted that, because Twitter is awful and you don't really get to add context too much. But like when Doc said that, clearly he's the head coach, he gets to make that decision. But I think what he was more saying is we have to find a way while not messing up, you know, what we have in our starters, what we have in our second unit. And, you know, it's an unfortunate circumstance that Matisse Thybul, has a shoulder soreness, going to be reevaluated in a week. And hopefully he's able to start the regular season. But with that it opened up an opportunity for Isaiah Joe. And he just continued to look like a guy that, yeah, I mean, he seems like he's going to, like, he should get some rotation minutes. I mean, he's coming for him because, as you mentioned, I think he was 4 of 8 in the first game, 3 of 4 last night. And just the confidence and the variety of threes he hits off the dribble in transition, hitting kind of like, you know, 30 footers off a ball screen, off movement. He hit one nice shot, wasn't a three, but he attacked the closeout, you know, took a couple dribbles in, hit like a 15 footer that was real smooth, made a couple nice backdoor cuts, like all these little things offensively that lean towards him, you know, really evolving as an NBA player. And then defensively, like you said, I was really impressed last season with his on-ball defense and how good he is at getting, like, beating guys' spots and anticipating, you know, the offensive player's next move. Just, it's something innate that he has. It's a really, you know, really good defensive instincts. I think through two preseason games, he's looked better off the ball. It looks like his perhaps, I don't know, maybe he's more comfortable. So he feels like he maybe, you know, and he did do well defensively, so we can maybe take an extra chance or two, but he had 2 steals and a block last night. Like, he just, to me, has the makings of a guy that is a rotational NBA player. Whether that's happens to start the season, whether that happens in the middle of the season, or whether that happens next year, this guy's got NBA rotation player written all over him. He is quintessential 3 and D, and that's, every team needs that. Every team is looking for that. And he 100% fits that mold. What Doc made the joke about last night is right. He weighs 120. I mean, he weighs a little bit more than 120, but he's skinny. And you see that when we see him in person, he's a skinny kid, but he fights. He's physical. He doesn't let that aspect get him down. He fights through screens really, really well for a smaller guy. Like, there is an impressive NBA skill set there. I'm not sure now whose minutes does he take? That's the more complicated question. But sometimes, like, you know, with the thibault injury, sometimes these things work themselves out. You get a guy in the mix like that. But, you know, to me, you have to find a way to get him in because I think he's been that good. And then just to put a kind of bow on like what you asked about, the other thing is Doc has raved about the second unit throughout training camp. The first game, we really didn't get a good look at that because Joel Embiid and Tobias Harris were out. So, you know, so the second unit wasn't truly the second unit. But last night, those guys look great. They really like, I think we're all kind of underestimating how big of an upgrade George Niang and Andre Drummond are going to be over Mike Scott and Dwight Howard, with all due respect to those guys. George Niang shoots the hell out of the basketball. I mean, he's an over 40% guy for his career, and you see it. It's so smooth. It's quick. He's long, so he can get it, you know, the shot up over people. And then he's just got really good instincts. Like, I know, again, another thing that people freaked out about when I tweeted about it, but like his ability as a playmaker, that's not saying he's going to break people down off the dribble or run the point, but there was a play last night where he gets double teamed in the corner. He finds Andre Drummond for an easy layup. Another play where he drew some attention, kind of threw a lob to Andre Drummond, and Drummond placed it in. Just those little plays that, quite frankly, with all due respect to Mike Scott, he can't make. And then same with Andre Drummond. I mean, there's been multiple passes where I've watched Andre Drummond make a read and make a pass, whether it resulted in a basket or not, whatever, but it was a great read.
Yeah.
And it's, again, Dwight Howard would never make that play, with all due respect to Dwight. So I just think those two guys are going to be such big upgrades. And then you talk about Maxey getting, whether it's Maxey, whether it's Shake Milton, you know, those guys, I just wrote something on Liberty Ballers today about those two, but whoever is the guy in the starting second unit should, you know, really benefit from playing with both of those guys. And then when Matisse Thybulle gets back into the mix, I mean, that's a really strong second unit. I think the Sixers are trotting out there.
Yeah. I'm with you. Cause I mean, I've seen that. I love what I saw from George Niang as well. I mean, in terms of he was diving for loose balls, he's showing that he wants to not just be a part of the rotation, but be a meaningful part of the rotation. You know what I mean? And showing that he brings a skill set, like you mentioned with Scott, that they didn't have last season. And I love what I've seen from him. And I noticed that too. So they're setting a lot of high screens using Drummond and Joel. You know, in the game against the Raptors, a lot of it was with Toby Harris at the top, but you know, using Drummond as a passer, and I've seen him make a couple of real nice reads and a couple of nice looks over the last couple of preseason games. And you know, when we were at practice last week, well, basically training camp, and getting to see what he's bringing to the table there, I'm excited for that. Before we jump into a break, I do want to ask you this though. Do you agree with Doc going with Shake Milton over Tyrese Maxey as a starter? I think I agree with the logic in the sense of Maxey can be the primary guy coming off the bench and kind of carry the second unit if things are struggling in terms of shooting, that he's able to get to the hole and kind of set the table. But not impressed with what I've seen from Shake Milton, not in terms of like he had a good run in the second quarter against the Raptors yesterday, but that start and even in the third quarter, I didn't like what I saw from him.
Yeah. I am kind of with you where I don't necessarily agree with it, but I do see the logic behind it. And I think it can benefit both guys. As Doc talked about last night, you know, you put Shake in the starting lineup and the offense, the offense isn't running through him. It's running through Joel Embiid and Tobias Harris. And then the third option is Seth Curry. And then really the fourth option is like Danny Green. So Shake being kind of the
fifth option, you, right, Paul?
Yeah, right. Shake kind of being the fifth option there. Like I think that can help Shake an awful lot. And I think it can bring out some of the elements that he, you know, some of the things he does well. With, you know, he is a good shooter. You know, last year he was kind of up and down, but I know off catch and shoot last year, he was still really good. And for throughout his career, both collegiately in the G League and in the NBA, he has been a really good shooter, especially catch and shoot, but also even off the dribble. You alluded to the second quarter. And I think the biggest difference for him in that second quarter was he pushed the pace. And I think that's where he gets into trouble, is when he gets tentative. He has to attack. Like, he has to attack every time he gets the ball, and he has to make quick decisions. If he starts over dribbling, that's when he gets himself into trouble. There was the one play he made where it was late in the second quarter. He brings the ball. They get a defensive stop. He pushes the pace up the floor on the left side. drives past his defender, and then instead of forcing something, you know, a shot at the rim, which he has done far too often, in my opinion, he throws a beautiful offhand skip pass to Seth Curry, finds Seth Curry for a wide open three.
Yeah.
So I think those are the little things where Shake is improving and where I think he's getting better. I do tend to agree with you, though, that like if you're just looking at it, like who's the better basketball player, who has more potential, no one would argue it's Tyrese Maxey. Like it's quite frankly to me, it's not even close. But I also think there's something to Maxey being on the second unit and basically being the guy. It's his show. He gets to run it. He doesn't have to worry about getting Joel Embiid or Tobias Harris touches or making sure Seth Curry gets his shots. He can just play. Doc Rivers seemed to indicate to us he didn't think it was a result of that. He thought it was just Tyrese played better. So we'll see. It seems like we're going to get a look at both guys again, possibly starting in the last two preseason games. We also have the blue and white scrimmage in Delaware on Saturday. We'll see what that kind of yields. But I see the benefit for both guys. I kind of get it. But, clearly Tyrese Maxey is the better player. And I think if you can start him, I think that's the better move.
Yeah, I'm with you there, too. But, I mean, we did see some of the deficiencies that they could have without a traditional point guard. And you know, that was one thing I picked up on just watching those two games against the Raptors. Obviously, game one without your two best players wasn't very pretty after the first quarter. But this one, the second one that they played, there's lulls in the offense where they need somebody who's going to be able to create and get to the hole. I feel like they have that with Maxey, but when he's not on the court, like you mentioned, it's going to have to be some sort of ball sharing system that it's not really dependent on one guy being able to get penetration. Paul, want to ask you about Shams' latest report on Ben Simmons. A little bit, a whole lot of nothing, but we'll jump into that after a short break. All right, we're back. Paul, wanted to talk about the report that Shams put out early Friday morning. It was this big thing, you know, on Twitter. It looks like latest on Ben Simmons and the 76ers, and they got some weird sounder playing underneath, what makes it sound, you know, it's like from like the 1980s or, you know what I mean? Some weird news channel, but Shams basically reporting that the Sixers still want Ben to come back and to see what Ben can do in terms of, you know, rejoining the organization and possibly playing for them. He's saying that Simmons has already emptied out his place. The plan is that he's already moved on. What do you make anything out of this? And is this something that we're looking at that, again, is just a whole lot of nothing and posturing between the two parties?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I see it as, especially, you know, with all due respect, that's especially what I see from Ben's side. I mean, this every time a report comes out of, oh, you know, basically like inferring that Ben might crack and show up, a report from Ben's camp comes out that, oh, no, he's, you know, he's put his house in Philly on the market. Oh, he's emptied his place. Oh, he understands the ramifications of his holdout, all that stuff. So, I mean, to me, here's the way I look at it, Jess. Like, honestly, like, and again, this is with all due respect to people reporting on it and all that, but Ben Simmons doesn't want to be here. The Sixers' demands are very high, and they would actually prefer for him to come back. What's changed? Nothing has changed for months. This is kind of the way really since if you want to go back, like since the beginning of the summer, nothing has really changed. Like what I was told was, you know, and I think Daryl Morey even reiterated it at media day was they never wanted to trade Ben. Ben's camp went to Daryl Morey, Elton Brand, the Sixers brass and said, we would like you to explore a trade. The Sixers said, okay, we'll explore it. There was nothing out there they liked, so they said, we're keeping him. I don't really, like, nothing's really changed.
Yeah.
The price is exorbitant. That's, you know, I saw that, you know, Shams said CJ McCollum and basically, like three first-rounders and three pick swaps. Daryl Morey knows that Neil Olshey isn't going to take that offer. Like, that was shit, like, that was basically to imply, I'm not doing this. Like, I'm not doing Ben Simmons for CJ McCollum because I don't like that trade. And we've seen that with other things, you know, that Warriors package where like it was all those young players and then four first round picks. That's not like Daryl Morey didn't expect anyone to meet those prices. That's his way of saying I'm not doing that. I don't want those players. I want players who can help me right now and could possibly help me compete for a title. There, from what the people I've talked to, there has never been any appetite for that step trade for getting a bunch of picks and moving them at a later date. The deal is they want, again, if Ben Simmons decided, you know what, let's put this all behind us. Let's move on. I'm going to show up. I'm going to play. They'd welcome him back and he'd play, and Doc Rivers would treat him, you know, like one of his best players, and the Sixers would welcome him back into the locker room. I don't see any of the players on the Sixers really having any true animosity towards Ben Simmons. Nor do I expect Doc Rivers would have any animosity. And then on top of that, it, you know, the other thing is if that can't happen, the Sixers are still, they're not going to trade him just to trade him. And then the other thing too, Jazz, is like, there was a lot of whispers about Indiana.
I was asking about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Malcolm Brogdon and Caris LeVert. So here's what I'm told. Basically in a nutshell, the Sixers didn't bring up Malcolm Brogdon or Caris LeVert. Okay. You know, it seems like this has been the case for every team the Sixers have negotiated with. It's one-sided. Teams are throwing out players and the Sixers are kind of like, yeah, no, like I'm not interested in those players. I don't see an Indiana trade being something that the Sixers would entertain. I really don't think that they're interested in that. Cause think about it like this. If you put Malcolm Brogdon, let's say they trade you Malcolm Brogdon and Caris LeVert, you get both guys out of it. How good does that put your ceiling? You're probably still a second round team, right? Like you're probably not beating the Brooklyn Nets. You're probably not beating the Milwaukee Bucks with those players. And it's no disrespect to those guys. I think they're fine players. And I think to an extent I can understand why people would see them as fits, but I don't see them being anything beyond a second round team. If Ben Simmons shows up, you already know you can be a second round team with him. And if he does a little bit more, you have the potential to be even more than that. So, you know, why are you going to make that move? And especially too, like if you're like a team like the Pacers, they're a play-in team right now. Like let's call it like we see it. Like they are likely a 7 or 8, 9, 10 seed. Like they are not one of the top six teams in the conference. If they're offering you this today, why wouldn't they be offering it to you 2 months from now, you know, or closer to the trade deadline? Like that offer is always going to be there. So why take it now when you can wait? You still hold the cards. Ben Simmons is under contract. So I think there is just a level of patience, maniacal patience that Daryl Morey has. And I think it so far it's been the right move. Could it blow up in his face eventually? Perhaps. But right now I think it makes sense to wait.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, I was reading this stuff all week about, okay, you know, Indiana's emerging as a dark horse team and Indiana, you know, being mentioned as a place that, hey, they have the assets. And I was like, no disrespect, like you said, because I think Caris LeVert's a very good player. Guy hasn't
I love
played,
Caris LeVert. Yeah,
yeah, he hasn't played over 50 games since, you know, back in 2017, 2018. So you don't want to run into that issue. Again, Brogdon, a very nice piece. And I'm with you because that's what I was thinking, too. I'm like, is this really going to move the needle for the Sixers to become a championship contender? Is this, you know what I mean? Like, no. And it's easy to see. Does that give them some nice pieces to work with? And like you mentioned, you know, could they maybe take Milwaukee or Brooklyn to 7 games in round 2? Sure. But it doesn't move the needle with the 27-year-old MVP candidate on your roster in Joel Embiid. And I think Daryl Morey is handling this right. There's one thing you did mention earlier. We're talking about Ben. I mean, I don't think it would be, I don't think the players would care if Ben came back, because at a certain point when you're in the NBA, these guys know this is just a business. You know what I mean? And they're looked at as we're commodities and assets too. And so I don't think they would get upset with them being, with Ben showing back up and it would be any awkwardness there. But, you know, we already know how the fans would take it, but what do you think the media circus would be like? Let's just say hypothetically, Ben Simmons does come back in, you know, December, and he's like, "Well, I'm sick of missing out on these $360,000, you know, dollar roughly game checks, and I'm tired of just sitting around. I want to get back and play." Let's just say Simmons does come back. How do you think that would go over with the media, and how crazy do you think it would get, not only at the games but at practices as well?
It would be insane, and I think, but I'll say this: I think this is one instance where having a guy like a Doc Rivers be your head coach would kind of come in handy, because he's dealt with plenty of circuses before. It's not his first rodeo with this kind of thing. So I think if he showed up, Doc would basically say, you know, hey, like, this is what we wanted all along. We always wanted Ben back. This is, you know, this is great. This is a good day for us. But I think a lot of, like, Joel Embiid even, you know, there's been some stuff Joel has said where, you know, people, I think, and fairly have kind of seen it as like, hey, he's kind of taking a shot. But at the same time, he's reiterated multiple times that they are a better team with Ben Simmons. He has said that. So I imagine that Joel Embiid would have that message on that day, say, hey, it's great that Ben's here because I think we're a better team. The interesting thing is when it would come to Ben, because like I have no idea what to expect from him. Is it a situation where he literally just comes out and says, I'm just here so I don't get fined kind of thing?
Yeah.
Is it a bunch of generic answers about, you know, I just want to play. I'm just trying to help this team win. Is he a little audacious and says, and is more honest and says, I am just coming here because I don't want to miss out on any more money. And I want to get traded. And this helps me get traded. Then I'm going to show up. I don't know that that's in his personality to do that, but who knows? So that would be the curious side of the media aspect to me. Like, I think Doc would handle it appropriately. I think like Joel Embiid and the players all down, I think they would definitely handle it appropriately. Not only do I think they'd be okay, Jess, I think they would be excited to have him back genuinely. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But as far as like how Ben would react, that would be the thing that would be the craziest. And it would be a circus. Like, we'd have every single national reporter, everybody from every network at practice, at games, just to kind of follow it. And it'll still, even if he shows up, it'll still be a daily saga, right? Because then it'll be, well, he didn't shoot this day, or you know what I mean? Or him and Joel Embiid had a back and forth on the court, even though it might be nothing. Like, everything will be something if he shows up.
Yeah, and that's to me is where it becomes a story, right? Where, and again, it might not happen on the court between the players, but when you're naturally, and I don't think Ben's going to once all of a sudden change his mind and be like, hey, I'm cool, I'm back in Philly now, let's just go after this thing. No, if he comes back, there's still going to be some contentious energy there, and the people aren't really, you know, this is not going to smooth out that Ben's going to end up playing for the Sixers for the next three seasons, you know, and anybody who thinks that obviously is delusional at this point. But I think the sideshow that would come with it is something that would be ultimately, I think, on the court, would be great for the team in terms of if Ben returns an all defense type, you know, multiple time all-star now on the court with you. But I just think what happens off the court, the drama would just keep going and going and going. And I just don't think it would be detrimental for the organization in the long run. Paul, we'll wrap things up. Is there anything you're working on coming up soon that we should be keeping our eye out for at Liberty Ballers? Are you just doing a bang up job as basically our go-to reporter there?
Yeah, I appreciate it. No. So today I just published something on the, you know, Doc Rivers had some interesting comments about the point guard quote unquote competition. Joel Embiid and Danny Green said they don't think it's a competition. So that was interesting. And just Doc, you know, mentioning they might not have a set starting lineup. It might depend on matchups. It might depend on other factors. So that's on libertyballers.com right now. We have Tom West wrote a great piece as well on Isaiah Joe and, you know, kind of making the case for him to earn more minutes. And then I will be in Delaware for the blue and white scrimmage, which I'm interested to see how that goes, what that looks like this year. I'm sure it'll be different from years past, but it was a very cool experience a couple years back, and very much looking forward to going back tomorrow.
And we're looking forward to reading all about it, Paul. That'll do it for this episode. As Paul mentioned, don't forget, check out libertyballers.com. Him and the entire crew, we got a great team of writers there. We'll have you covered throughout the Sixer season. And of course, subscribe to the Liberty Ballers Podcast Network. We are on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts. New shows coming at you 5 days a week. So we're hoping to grow that as we get, as you mentioned, into the regular season. That'll do it for this one. I'll talk to you all next time.